The content of this podcast is provided for general informational and entertainment purposes only and is not intended as legal advice. The content of this podcast does not establish an attorney-client relationship between the hosts or the guests and the general audience. If you need specific legal advice for your legal matter, please contact an attorney in your area. This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. This show examines the latest legal topics and news facing families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. It is hosted by lawyers Rob Schenck and Will Smith of Schenck Smith LLC, a personal injury law firm based in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to the show. Hello out there and welcome to episode 50.
The big 50.
The big 50, and welcome to 2018.
2018. Wow. Also the year that we turn the big 40.
The big 40. It's good to be back. We were on hiatus for the holidays and the new year. So it's good to be back in the driver's seat, in the catbird seat, for 2018. A lot of good things. And so I had a good time in Brazil, theoretically. I had a great time in Brazil with Daniela's family. Went to Curitiba, went to Indaial, had some acai bowls. Drank. They have.
So that's how you pronounce it, is acai.
Yeah, the C with the little ding dong is like an S sound.
Yeah, this is Portuguese.
Yeah,
his girlfriend is Brazilian. They speak Portuguese,
and they have this thing. It's delicious. Not so much. We don't have it here very much, but it's a. They take literally sugar cane and put it into a juicer, and you drink sugarcane juice.
Oh, good Lord.
And this is one of those things that you learn when you go somewhere that you wouldn't know this if you weren't there, is when you go to the street vendor for it, and they pour you the cup of sugarcane juice. Remember, it's summertime there. And they give you the sugarcane juice. When they pour it up, and you give them their two reais, and like $2, and you drink it, you can go, hey, may I have some more? And they have to pour you some more.
Oh,
it's
for free.
It's customary.
Ah.
And I felt bad about that. Like, no, don't give them any more money because they're supposed to. It's like it's included. But anyway.
So you just stand there like
hypothetically? Well, one time. It's a good one time. And so that was my holidays. How was your holidays,
Will? They were great. What do you? I mean, we've already discussed this.
You think after 50 episodes, I would know to not ask Will anything. But anyway, anyway, so what do we have on the horizon for this episode, Will?
So we have a very good friend of mine, attorney Richard Armin, and I think I mentioned this last time. Richard's wife, Kyleen Armin, was Kyleen Farmer in law school, and she and I were best friends, still are best friends. So I've known Richard now a long time, like almost 7 years, because they started dating right at the end of law school and then got married soon after that.
It's like the Us Weekly version of who our guest is.
Yeah. Well, they're very close to me. I mean, these are two of my best friends. Anyway, but Richard started off as a prosecutor in the solicitor's office of Gwinnett County. It's the office that handles Gwinnett State Court and Gwinnett Recorder's Court misdemeanor and traffic violation cases, including cases that are bound over from municipal court. From November 2007, which is when I started law school, through January of 2011, just a year after me and Kyleen graduated, then he became the supervisor, the lead assistant solicitor general of trial division. From that, he was hired in January of 2011 in the district attorney's office, which handles felonies, so the more severe criminal cases. He worked there for over 6 years as a felony prosecutor, first as an assistant district attorney from 2011 through 2014, and he quickly rose to the position of supervisor in a felony trial courtroom as a senior managing assistant district attorney from January 2014 until he left in May of 2017. Now, he was the lead attorney in cases involving murder, rape, armed robbery, aggravated assault, drugs, theft, and all other levels of felony cases. And he had the nickname of Trial Dog in the district attorney's office for taking trials, for taking cases to trial the most in one calendar year. I mean, so this guy is a trial attorney. He now practices in the areas of plaintiff's personal injury and wrongful death cases. His office, the Armand Firm, LLC, is located at 260 Constitution Boulevard, Lawrenceville, Georgia, 1 mile from the Gwinnett Justice and Administration Center, which is the Gwinnett County Courthouse. And we're going to put his contact information up on the screen.
Gene, can we get Richard's contact information up on the screen? And
Gene is our producer. Anyway, Richard, we are so happy to have you on the show. Welcome.
Great to be here.
Awesome, Richard. Thank you, Will. So, Richard, it's my understanding that you prosecuted an individual for elderly abuse under a particular statute in Georgia that it's not necessarily geared towards facilities and nursing homes, but it's geared towards those caretakers like family members or maybe home care individuals that oversee those with special needs that prevents, you know, exploitation, financial exploitation, abuse, negligence, that kind of thing. Can you, because we always talk about the civil component to
right.
these cases.
Suing these people in civil court.
In civil court. We don't go through the actual trial process from a criminal statute angle. So that's kind of what we wanted to kind of have you on and talk about. What's your experience? I know that you've done at least one of these cases under the exploitation statute. Can you walk us through the facts of that case and kind of how it shook down?
Absolutely. I'd be glad to. First of all, the Official Code of Georgia has specific provisions in it that protect elder persons as well as disabled adults from abuse, from exploitation. Those are found in Title 16, which is the title under the Georgia Code that applies to crimes and offenses. So totally separate area than the civil arena that y'all have practiced in and done such a good job for. But it's Title 16, Chapter 5, Article 8. Is where the statutes that protect elder persons are found. And the two main statutes that apply are 16-5-101, which applies as to neglect to a disabled adult, elder person, or resident. And the second one is 16-5-102, which is for exploitation and intimidation of disabled adults, elder persons, and residents. Or obstruction of an investigation. And I've handled several cases specifically in this area in my time as a prosecutor. And one of them actually went to trial with kind of a strange ending, and it's kind of a long story, but it's actually kind of an interesting case. It was one that had some media attention, and I'll keep names out of it, but it was an individual that was charged with a crime for going on an elder man's property who lived by himself at a home in Lilburn, Georgia, in Gwinnett County.
I remember this. All right. Go ahead. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you. I just now realized that I remember this case, and I remember talking with you about it. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, Richard.
The particular defendant ran a tree service company, going to people's houses, cutting down trees. So he and his crew of two other people working with him show up at this man's house unannounced and knock on his door and tell him, hey, you've got old trees on your property and they need to be cut down. There's no evidence whatsoever that there was anything wrong with these trees. He had a nice wooded lot on his property. He lived by himself. His spouse was deceased. But trying to make it on his own, and he was not in a facility of any type, assisted living facility or nursing home. But these individuals showed up at his residence unannounced and tell him, you've got trees that need to be cut down. They proceed without obtaining permission from him to go on his property, and they cut down about 7 or 8 different trees on his property. And as far as the professional level of services that they provided, it was just not what you would expect from a tree service. You're talking stumps 5 or 6 feet off the ground, not even cut down to an actual stump. Trees were left there on the property, not cut up, not brought to the roadside. And then they go inside his house after cutting down 7 or 8 trees on his property and demand payment of several thousand dollars from this man. And he told the police that he was scared. These people were in his home. He was afraid of what was going on. He wrote the check to them for tree cutting services, where trees, yes, they were cut down, but it's not anything that anyone paying for tree services would expect. And none of these trees even needed to be cut down. And essentially, this was when I was relatively new to the district attorney's office, where I had spent several years handling misdemeanor offenses. It was one of my earliest felony trials. It was within the first year I was in the district attorney's office, probably my third or fourth trial at that point. The previous prosecutor in the case had actually charged the case, even though there was a specific statute. It was found at a different part of Georgia law at that time. The statutes have since been amended to provide greater protection to elder persons under Georgia law. Even though there was an exploitation statute in place at that time, the previous prosecutor had presented a indictment to the grand jury and charged this individual with robbery for essentially taking money from the presence of this elder person by intimidation.
Yeah, okay.
And this case was several years old when I inherited it.
Yeah.
And over the course of the several years, and as y'all know, in some of these cases, they are very difficult to prosecute, whether criminally or prosecute a civil claim, when you have an elder person that's in later stages of their life. And this man was undergoing the beginning signs of dementia, and he would have good days where he could recall things that happened. He would have bad days where he couldn't testify as to much of what happened. And frankly, he had forgotten a decent amount of what had happened by the time it got to trial.
Yeah.
But I inherited it as a robbery case, and we tried that case. And he was brought into court in a wheelchair. He couldn't take the witness stand. He had to be wheeled into the well of the courtroom and sat in front of the jury for direct and cross-examination. And he was able to recollect a few of the details as to what had happened to him. And then in the prosecution of the case, I was able to, through the police officer that had interviewed him, essentially get in his prior inconsistent statement, basically to impeach my own witness with the extra details that he was no longer able to testify to in these later stages, 2 to 3 years after it actually happened to him.
Oh, that's clever, dude. That's awesome. So, yeah.
It was actually an interesting case, but the difficult part was it was a case that really should have been charged initially as exploitation of an elder person and not as robbery, because the statute is much more favorable. It uses terms in the exploitation statute that you hear a lot of times in civil law. Because this was a financial exploitation case, and the definition under Georgia law, the definitions are at 16.5.100. Exploit means illegally or improperly using a disabled adult or elder person or that person's resources through undue influence, coercion, harassment, duress, deception, false representation, false pretense, or other similar means.
Okay, so I was going to say, so it just so happened that I guess my question would be this. So they're driving down the neighborhood looking to see who they can basically misrepresent what they do to, and they come to this guy's house that has trees in his yard. So does the law say that they have to know that the person is elderly when they come in with the idea of bilking somebody for yard or lawn services, or how does that work in terms of intent?
As for an intent, if a person is 65 years of age or older, they qualify under Georgia law as an elder person.
Okay.
If the person committing the crime against them in good faith believes that the person, let's say, for example, is 58 years of age, it would be irrelevant to the crime. As long as the person on the date of the crime is 65 years of age or older the crime applies to them, the jury would be charged on that. The knowledge of age is not an essential element of the crime. The state has no burden of proving that the defendant knew the person was 65 years of age or older. That would be the same as when you deal with crimes against children. For example, sexual crimes, where the age of consent in Georgia is 16. If someone is 15 years of age on the date of a crime being committed against them that was a voluntary act, but they cannot legally consent, it would be the same thing if the person engaging in that act believed that the person was 18 years of age and not 15. It's irrelevant. The law still applies. So all we had to do on that front, if it had been charged properly, was show that this individual was 65 years of age or older, and he was well into his 70s on the date of the offense.
Okay. So yeah, if there's a Benjamin Button issue where you've got somebody who's aging backwards and they look like they're 17, but they end up being 65, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, there's no Benjamin Button defense is what
you're saying. No Benjamin Button defense.
Exactly.
So, and Richard, so the statute that you mentioned, the exploitation statute, this is just dealing with financial exploitation, misrepresentation, or some type of subterfuge in order to get to bilk the money from an elderly person.
Well, the particular statute, that's the definition of exploit. But this particular statute, 16-5-102, it criminalizes any person who knowingly and willfully exploits a disabled adult, elder person, or resident, and it also criminalizes any person that willfully inflicts physical pain, physical injury, sexual abuse, mental anguish, or unreasonable confinement on such persons. And it also applies to willfully depriving those persons of essential services. So it's kind of a broad statute that it goes towards financial exploitation, it goes towards infliction of physical pain, it also goes towards depriving essential services to those people. So it gives a great deal of protection under the criminal laws to elder persons, disabled adults, and persons that fall in those categories under Georgia law. And there's also a separate 16-5-101 for more negligent type offenses against a neglect to a disabled adult, elder person, or resident. Does that sort of make sense as far as the criminal statute?
Yeah, and absolutely. Just so our listeners are clear on this, what, because this guy was indicted for robbery, how do you define robbery? What are the elements?
Well, the particular type of robbery we were dealing with was taking property, which would be the check for United States currency from the immediate presence of the victim, by intimidation. There are multiple ways. There's armed robbery, there's regular robbery. Robbery can take place by intimidation, it can take place by force, it can take place by sudden snatching. This particular robbery was charged as a robbery by intimidation. But they were there, they performed these services that the guy did not want and intimidated him into writing that check for them. Robbery carries a penalty under Georgia law of up to 20 years in prison. It's a 1 up to 20 year offense. However, the exploitation statute, which would have been a better way for it to have initially been charged, also carries the exact same punishment range of 1 up to 20 years. However, instead of having to prove committing an act of intimidation, it was a much easier case if it had been charged on the elder person exploitation statute, because you can show with the work that was done, you don't have to show that intimidation occurred. You could show that this was undue influence, this was deception for things we did that we didn't really do because they didn't do tree cutting services as anyone would expect paying for such services, harassment, coercion. Any of those would have applied if it had been charged properly in the beginning. And it was sort of a case that I had inherited and it was old as dirt and go in there and try this case.
You made lemonade.
In there, you get a caseload, and you gotta get in there and get your cases moving. You gotta get them tried. People need justice, and we couldn't sit on this case because the older it got, the weaker it was getting because of the ability to testify from the victim in the case.
So, Richard, with regard to that, in terms of how it was indicted and such, can you, most of our listeners are individuals that have loved ones in nursing homes, okay, or have loved ones that are possibly on their way to the nursing home, and maybe they suspect that somebody that's their caretaker, maybe that's their cousin or their brother or somebody is either financially exploiting them or abusing them, and it would be applicable under this criminal statute. Do you have an understanding as to what their steps should be? Do they call 911? Do they call the sheriff's office? And if they do, is the sheriff's office going to say this is more of a civil matter if somebody's taking somebody's money? Can you kind of walk us through that and give us your perspective on that?
Absolutely. If they believe that one of their loved ones in a assisted living facility, nursing home, any situation such as that is being either financially exploited in any way or physically abused in any way or being neglected to the point where it's affecting the health and well-being of that person, it is potentially a crime under the two statutes applicable, 16-5-101 and 16-5-102. They should contact the local law enforcement authority in the area where their loved one is residing in the facility. If this were somewhere in, for example, where I've practiced most of my career, unincorporated Gwinnett County, you would contact the Gwinnett County Police Department. If it was, for example, in the city limits of Sewanee in Gwinnett County, Georgia, you would contact the Sewanee Police Department based on, essentially, if you were to call 911 from that facility, what department would respond to it. In more rural counties of Georgia, you're going to be dealing a lot of times with a sheriff's department. And Gwinnett obviously does have a sheriff's department, but the police handle more of the criminal investigations. The sheriff's department in Gwinnett handles security at the jail, running the jail, courtroom security. They do some law enforcement aspects. They do have a drug task force. But you would contact the local law enforcement office where the facility is located to make the report. And it would be taken seriously. Most departments have people assigned to handle these cases, special victims unit detectives, or sometimes if it's a financial one, it'll be assigned to a financial crimes detective. Okay. But these cases typically are taken very seriously by law enforcement when there is this type of evidence someone's being financially exploited or abused, neglected, those type of things.
Right. So let's step into the shoes of that individual. She's contacted the sheriff's department and she is told the investigator, this happened to my loved one. In terms of moving that case forward, when it, you know, when it got to your desk? Like, what's the next step? Do you interview them or how does that work?
The typical way, and in the district attorney's office, we would get a lot of calls from people sort of making reports, and the way it happens is they get referred back to where the investigation commences, which is the local police department. The local police department will investigate a crime and forward the results of their investigation when they find probable cause to charge a person, or sometimes when they're not sure if there's probable cause to charge a person with a crime, they will then forward it on to the district attorney's office for further review. But essentially, it's a local law enforcement agency that does the investigation. When they complete their investigation, it would get forwarded on to the district attorney's office for review. It gets assigned to an individual prosecutor on the case who then makes the decision whether to file charges by way of an indictment, which is a presentation. And I know a lot of this stuff is kind of foreign to the listeners, but I'll try to explain it as best as I can. You file what's called an indictment, which is basically a piece of paper that charges a person with a crime. And it gets presented to what's called a grand jury, which is a group of citizens that hear all the serious cases and vote on whether to do what's called returning a true bill of indictment, which formally charges a person in superior court with a crime, or a no bill, which means they've declined to give an authorization to prosecute a case in superior court. And the case is sort of done at that point, unless there's a second presentation made to a different grand jury at a later date. But the individual prosecutor has great discretion, And in most offices, as in the way Gwinnett County works, is when one prosecutor makes the decision, they have a supervisor that then reviews that decision. So there's a second level of check to make sure that decision is the correct decision that, that has been made, whether to prosecute a person or whether to decline a prosecution. But most of the time, I would say over 90% of the time, when the police have taken a warrant and charged a person or arrested a person for a crime, I would say over 90% of the time, that case is going to end up getting prosecuted in Superior Court. If that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, no. Okay, so that's thank you very much for that, Richard. That was great. So let's take it from where it hits your desk. Like, how is the loved one how is the family member, the loved one who has been exploited, how are they involved in the process? And in my hypothetical to you, the individual that's been exploited might not have might have cognitive impairments, and they might not be able to be a witness. So it's the loved one that's doing this. How are they involved in the investigation? Do you meet with them? Like, do you get documents? That kind of thing. How do you build your case?
Absolutely. Well, typically the police officer or the police detective is going to have met with them already and obtained a statement and obtained all the documentation that they felt was necessary to take action, to take a warrant and charge a person by warrant and arrest the person. And they will also attempt to interview the loved one, if that's possible also, to build their case. That then, when the prosecutor gets it and you make the decision to charge the crime by indictment and it makes its way to a trial calendar, when you prepare for trial, you never take a case into court without preparing for trial by interviewing all of your witnesses. So the loved one that makes the report, the prosecutor, either in the prosecutor's office, or it's not uncommon to go out in the field and meet with a person at their place of work if they choose to, their home, try to be convenient for the witnesses on the state side. You meet with them and go over all of the facts of the case, all of the documents, see if there's anything that's missing that needs to be added to the case to be served in discovery to the other side. And you prepare your case by interviewing the loved one and interviewing the victim as well. An example in that tree cutting case, I mean, the prior prosecutor had been out to the victim's house and interviewed him. He had, he really didn't have any family in the area. There was an individual that assisted him, a friend of his. He was interviewed as well, and he was a potential witness in the case as well. That individual was interviewed, the caretaker, as well as the victim in preparation for trial. The police officer that interviewed the victim was interviewed in preparation for trial.
Mm-hmm. And something we didn't cover, what happened with the case?
It was a very strange outcome. It's something I have never seen before. Have either of you ever heard of the crime of embracery under Georgia law?
Of in what?
Embracery.
No.
That is what happens when someone tries to influence a juror in their decision on a case. And essentially what happened with the case is after one, probably about the second day of trial, the first day was mainly jury selection, the second day was putting up evidence, the jury got sent home for the evening. And when they were walking to their vehicles in the parking lot, this particular defendant was on bond and went up to some of the jurors and said, "Do the right thing. Do the right thing by God." And it's a crime of embracery that, with the intent to influence a person serving as a juror, communicating with them in an attempt to influence their action as a juror.
Huh.
So the next morning, we're sitting there ready for court to resume. And bailiff comes in with a note that a juror wants the judge to know what happened in the parking lot. And then all the jurors had to be brought back in, questioned, and essentially a mistrial was declared in the case on the robbery charge. And I sort of saw how the evidence came forward. And I was thinking from before that trial, this really should be an exploitation case and not a robbery. And I was able to get the benefit of then talking to these jurors that this defendant had committed a crime against, which is a felony crime also, that if it was exploitation, their decision would have been easier because they were in a split where they couldn't decide. Some were saying not guilty, some were saying guilty. And essentially what happened with the case then was represented to the grand jury charging exploitation. Another indictment was returned charging him with embracery, and it resulted in where he no longer wanted to go to trial, and he did a guilty plea in the case when the charges were done properly. And for the listeners out there, that's illustrates the importance of having people that are experienced and review the case. As I know, the lawyers at Schenck and Smith do in these cases. That's why it's so important to have attorneys like you guys that practice in a specific area, like nursing home abuse. Because with just the experience I gained in that one trial, it's so important to start a case off right from the beginning. In any case I ever got where there were charges against an elder person and that statute fit, it's such a useful tool to a prosecutor, I would always consider that statute. And that's the importance of experience in areas dealing with elder persons. There are unique laws that protect elder persons under Georgia law, and that was a good example of it.
Awesome, man. So where are we at, Rob?
I think we kind of covered a lot of the exploitation statute, and we've run out of time for this particular episode. Maybe Richard will come next week and we can maybe squeeze a little bit more out of that exploitation statute. I got a few more questions for him that we're not going to get to this episode, but thank you very much, Richard, for coming on the show, Trial Dog of Gwinnett County. How do people get in touch with Richard, Will?
Well, they can call his office at 678-661-9585, or you can go to his website, which is www.armonlaw.com, and Armon is ARMOND law.com.
And we'll get Gene to put that up.
We'll get Gene to put that up. Gene is the producer.
But Richard, thank you so much for being on the show. And I guess with that, sometimes I forget this, but this is an audio and video podcast. You want to listen to the audio, you can go to Stitcher or iTunes or possibly Spotify. Now that it's 2018, who knows what always in motion is the future. Or you can watch us. We obviously prefer that you watch us. Will's always talking about he got a new suit. He's going to wear it, you know, to the next taping of the podcast. He's very materialistic and into his appearance. So he would really love it if you watch the podcast.
Right.
And you can do that either on our YouTube channel or at our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. And with that, we will see you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, and feel free to leave us some feedback. And for more information about the topics discussed in this episode, check out the show website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. That's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.